The largest audience recorded at New York's Guggenheim Museum was for an exhibition of art by someone you might not expect, trailblazing Swedish artist and mystic Hilma af Klint, that had been hidden away for decades. Now the work of this pioneer in abstract art is about to go on show here in Aotearoa. City Gallery Wellington is hosting Hilma af Klint, The Secret Paintings. Secret because she left instructions that her work be locked away until at least 20 years after her death. The artist started producing large-scale, brightly coloured abstract works in the early 1900s, before her better-known contemporaries like Kandinsky and Mondrian. At the heart of this exhibition is a series called The Ten Largest, 3-metre-high paintings created for a proposed temple that she painted in secret over 10 years. We have a big gallery of images of Hilma's work on our webpage. Take a look at it. The gallery's senior curator, Aaron Lister, explains why she asked her family to hide her paintings until the time was right for them to be fully appreciated.
She made a mammoth body of work over a long number of years, many years, and kind of couldn't quite find the audience that she was looking for. She was, you know, there's this kind of this weird idea that we've broken through now, I think, that af Klint was really reclusive and didn't want an audience in her time. None of that's true. She was looking for an audience. She was always trying to get her work shown by the right people in the right context, and it never really happened. And so she kind of hit a point, you know, quite late in her career where she decided that the time was right to put these works away because the world was not ready for them. And they actually kind of demanded or were speaking to a future audience in a future time who would actually kind of understand their implications. So that was kind of the reason behind this decision to hold them back until the world was ready for their message, or the world was ready to receive their message.
And when was the world ready to receive their message?
Late 60s. I think we as a kind of collective contemporary culture kind of want to believe and have to believe that we're almost that audience now. But we have certainly the way that the world has really kind of responded to her work over recent years, especially I think since the exhibition at the Guggenheim Museum in 2018, which really kind of transformed her into a kind of a global phenomenon. I think there seem to be reasons. She seems to speak very closely, very clearly and directly to a contemporary audience, to contemporary concerns. And we kind of see ourselves in her, you know, we see ourselves in its works. It's a really nice play. I mean, are we the audience that she envisioned? Are we that open and receptive to the message? That's a question mark. But it's certainly kind of part of the story for us all. These are made for us.
She is such a fascinating character, though, isn't she? I mean, not only the quality of her art that we'll come back to, but the fact that she was a mystic also.
The story is incredible. Her life story is incredible, and you know, this kind of what's also really exciting about it for us again as an audience now is that we're still discovering these things about her and her work as well, but especially about her, I think, which are kind of making her this really rich and complex and interesting figure. Who, like you say, I mean, total trailblazer, cut her own path, made her own decisions, created this incredibly kind of unique and kind of, you know, idiosyncratic and secretive body of work, all on her own terms.
Aaron, as a matter of interest, who did she entrust her work to? I mean, they would have needed a large storage area by the sound of things because the works were so grand. But who actually, you know, cared for the works and then, I guess, some kind of big reveal?
So it was with the family, and a nephew of hers who was quite surprised, apparently, to be gifted such a body of work to look after. So it was very much stored and just looked after by the family until the time arrived when it was time to be unraveled. And when the unveiling happened, they weren't certain, the family weren't certain exactly what they got, what they were getting into, because, of course, Hilma's often talked about even within the family as being a kind of a slightly odd figure. You know, no one knew what she was doing exactly. So the work was opened up and then there's the famous story that the family approached a museum director to say, this work's become available, would you like it? And the director said no, turned it down, claiming famously that af Klint was a mystic, not an artist, which has certainly kind of gone down as probably one of the worst directorial decisions in art history. So from that point on, the family have developed a foundation which looks after the work, and they look after it today. So it's still largely a family-run operation.
Well, let's have a look at her art. I mean, we're looking at the fact that she predated Mondrian and Kandinsky and some of the other greats of abstract art that we know of now. But what about the quality of her work? And when did she start working in abstract?
She kind of started off very much in a much more conventional artistic language. She kind of graduated from the Royal College of Art of Stockholm 1880, a little bit earlier than that even, and started very much, you know, having a successful career kind of making portraits and landscapes. Did this incredible thing where she was hired to be the draftsman for the Veterinary Institute. At that stage, she was making art in a very kind of conventional way. But then this kind of key shift happens around the, 1904. And it's the start, and even earlier, actually, probably about 1896, that's when she starts working with her group of five other women called the Femme, who decide to band together and create art out of this kind of really interesting blend of the spiritualism of the time, the science of the time. And that's when they kind of broke through to this whole other language of abstraction, visionary arts that moves through the veil of the world to access kind of deeper truth. So that's the point when this all happens. And then in kind of 1906, she is commissioned, or one of the five were commissioned to make this the Grand Commission by the spirit guides. Apparently some of the other members of DFEM kind of turned down the idea. It felt too scary. It felt like a too big a commitment. But that's where Hilma af Klint stood up and took on that commission and started working by herself towards this amazing kind of paintings for the temple cycle.
When you look at the work, what do you see? Because, I mean, part of what she was wanting to do, this link between the spiritualist realm and the scientific realm, really fascinating. But that idea of trying to communicate the invisible through her art.
That's the thing I really get out of all her work, where it's just that real sense of a quest to reveal something bigger to us. And, you know, she's very concerned about addressing us as the viewer, as the audience of her work, and helping us navigate these different zones, these different ways of seeing. You know, some of the bodies of work, something like the Swan, for example, kind of a big body work we're showing here, you know, starts off very figurative, moves into the abstract, comes back to the figurative. And every painting, you can kind of sense how she's guiding us through different ways of seeing and different ways of understanding, different ways of being. We know Hilma was guided by the spirits, but we're almost being guided by Hilma through this kind of quite a revelationary experience. So it's a body of work to me which almost forces you as a viewer to approach it in a really open and generative way and let it come to you, which is actually kind of a rare experience these days.
What about her palette? Was she drawn to the bright in her work?
There's a lot of variety actually, and she's got very clear kind of color combinations. She's using color very kind of very knowingly and very strategically through her work. So it does swing from quite expressive and bright emotive colors, which generally kind of represent a kind of a restless spirit in her world, to more kind of subdued, harmonious colors. Yellow is a color she used to represent kind of masculinity, and blue to represent femininity, and green is it kind of coming together. And you start picking up the way that these colors operate throughout her entire body of work.
Has the reveal of Hilma's work meant that art history has had to be revised or even rewritten?
Yeah, well, it's so exciting. It's like this, I mean, her work just kind of comes and explodes along, you know, a lot of the myths, a lot of the histories, which already start to feel a little bit stale already. But yeah, so it's like rethinking where she fits and what this means for especially modern art and abstraction at this time. It's caused a whole bunch of revision. I mean, I think the idea that she invented abstraction, that's, you know, probably pushing things a bit far. Abstractions exist in a lot of different forms, a lot of different ways. She did it before Kandinsky and Malevich, again, probably not. These are all parallel investigations taking part at the same time. What's far more interesting is less who got there first than the strategy, what she did with it. That's what's so fascinating now, and that's what speaks to us. So I think it's done a lot of things. It's made art history really exciting again. You know, suddenly the kind of the energy that has developed around this work, and also other figures like Hilma. So, you know, it's let us kind of apply a broader vision to what which artists have been included in the story and which have been excluded. Another key one, of course, is, you know, art history historically, I guess, has kind of kept the spiritualist and the mystical kind of slightly to the side. But if you're centering Hilma, that means you have to, you bring that in, and that opens up a whole bunch of new stories and new trajectories and new artists. So it really is a total shot in the arm.
The temple cycle, which is at the heart of this exhibition coming to Aotearoa, you mentioned before, quite remarkable. So she made the works in secret. This is between 1906 and 1915. It's an awful long time. For almost a year before then, she went through a kind of a purification process to kind of focus herself. The 10 largest, which is at the centrepiece of the cycle. These sound quite lovely. The four stages of human life is what she's looking at. And these are huge paintings.
Incredible. You know, we've had to extend our gallery walls to kind of accommodate them, which is, you know, remarkable. You think we're dealing with work, you know, made at the start of the 20th century. This, you know, we're really interested because one of the ways that we've been able to display, which is really unique actually, is to show them all on one long wall, which creates a very different experience from other galleries where I've seen them, where they've been, you know, split across different galleries or split across different walls. And you can really, again, see that way she moves us through this life cycle and she kind of carries us from the beginning of time to the end of our time. And it's a body of work you just stop in front of and it stops you and, you know, everything else just like drops away.
I think originally her vision for these cycle works was that they would be seen by visitors climbing up a grand spiral temple, and the works would be at the top, some kind of, you know, like a path of enlightenment. Were they ever shown in that way?
No. So, I mean, yeah, she, right from the start, again, she had, you know, the paintings of the temple cycle were conveyed to her through a spirit guide, and also one of the spirit guides also conveyed this idea that the ideal space for these paintings to be held in was a spiral temple in which the viewer would move through her body of work and also, I guess, through the architecture to kind of ascend with the work and reach a state of nirvana at the top. At the top of the temple would be the altarpieces, the kind of the triptych, the altarpieces, which we've also got in the show, and the 10 largest kind of along the way as part of a kind of a library experience. So it's what's so interesting about that is that Arthur Clint really kind of had everything in mind when she's making these works. You know, each series is very controlled, you know, in terms of how it's sequenced and how it moves us, how the series move into each other, and then also in her mind how you can, how they operate inside this temple. You know, unfortunately, of course, the temple was never built, but that was also one of the really lovely things about seeing the show at the Guggenheim Museum, which, of course, also does have spiral architecture. So while it wasn't the exact temple she had built for her work, you got this idea of what it meant to be inside her kind of, you know, imaginary or envisioned temple of art.
The exhibition includes notebooks of hers. I imagine these are a real treasure trove. So she's writing down her ideas, then she's writing down her thoughts and her plans, and also the material that she wanted to be hidden away. But, I mean, that must be a great joy for someone like yourself who loves her work and is interested in her process to have the notebooks.
Yeah, I mean, I had this great privilege of being able to make my way through some of the notebooks, the collaborative notebooks made with Defemme in 1906. So these automatic drawings, automatic writings, which have been kind of preserved and looked after by the foundation over all this time, and to actually see those ideas manifest, to see that, you know, the pencil marks on those pages is an incredible experience. And I think that's what I really hope that, you know, audience totally get out of this as well. I mean, the 10 largest, the altarpieces, they are these incredible art experiences. But we've also got so many of these notebooks which really reveal her thinking and her processes. The blue books, for example, the notebooks which actually have images of all the work she made through the paintings of the temple cycle. So it's almost like a mobile kind of gallery. So she could move around and show people her work. So to be able to show those in the same spaces as the work itself really offers a number of kind of access points into her work.
City Gallery Wellington reveals Hilma Arth Clint, The Secret Paintings, on the 2nd of December. I was talking to curator Aaron Lister.